CEOs, civic leaders, entertainers, and entrepreneurs. They all have something in common: the drive, vision, and heart to achieve success. Steve Klein is a renowned business consultant, author, and host of Playmakers Talk Show. Each week, he introduces you to fascinating personalities who will inspire, educate, and motivate you to persevere and find your own success. And now, here's Steve Klein.
William James said, "It's our attitude at the beginning of a difficult undertaking, which, more than anything else, will determine its successful outcome." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today are two guests who have an attitude of success. Our first Playmakers organization saves lives by recovering almost 1,200 organs for transplant annually, while our next Playmakers software and data help thousands of organizations, events, and hotels around the world. With us today is a CEO whose organization can save 8 lives through an organ donation, while our next CEO's company serves 70% of the Fortune 500 and over 100,000 hotels. These great Playmakers are Patty Niles. Patty is president and CEO of Southwest Transplant Alliance, and David Bonnet. David is CEO of Lanyon, and we'll begin today's show with David. David Bonnet has been the CEO of Lanyon for the last 2 years. The Dallas-based global meetings, events, and travel software provider created the industry's leading cloud-based software for managing corporate meetings, events, and travel programs. Lanyon serves 70% of the Fortune 500, 80% of the Business Travel News Corporate Travel 100, and over 100,000 hotels. Lanyon software data helps organizations and hotels around the world better engage their customers, reduce costs, and grow revenues. Prior to joining Lanyon, Davis served as CEO of Big Machines for 3 years as the company achieved record-setting results, leading to an acquisition by Oracle. Before that, he held a variety of executive roles at Oracle, where he led North American organizations in enterprise resource planning, customer relationship management, and counseling. Well, David, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you.
Well, the first question I want to ask you is, how did you find yourself in the meeting software business with your education in New Hampshire and the UK?
How do I connect the dots? Let's see. So I grew up in New York. I went to school in New Hampshire. The day after I graduated, I got in my car and I drove to the West Coast. And I wound up in software, actually at Oracle. Was there for 16 years, as you noted. Went to Big Machines, acquired by Oracle. And Big Machines was owned by Vista Equity, leading private equity firm doing just software, also owned Lanyon, and said, hey, we've got another one for you. Why don't you come and lead Lanyon? One thing led to another, and here I am in Dallas, Texas.
Well, you also attended Oxford Brookes University.
I did.
Where did that fit in the sequence?
Prominently, in fact. It's a good question. So that was probably the most seminal moment of my adult life. So I was a bit of an underachiever in college, applied to get into Oxford. Got in, spent a semester over there, and I was about 20 years old and realized for the first time that it was not cool to be cool, it was cool to be smart. And that prompted me to kind of go pursue stuff that I didn't think I could pursue. So that was my first of probably 4 imposter complexes that I had to work through.
Why the UK and why that school?
The prominence of the school, I reached for something that I did not think was attainable. And it was. So I suppose I wanted to prove it as much as anything else.
And you've continued doing that, too.
I have overreached, for sure.
We were talking before the show started, and that's kind of the philosophy of Lanyon, too. So let's talk about Lanyon. The website is lanyon.com, LANYON.com, which is event management. But give us an overview. What do you do?
Yeah, so we have 2 software clouds. We have one that companies like Salesforce.com, Johnson & Johnson, Goldman Sachs, Fortune 1000, even down to small companies, use that cloud to run their meetings, events, and travel. So our software will power huge conferences like Dreamforce in San Francisco. 170,000 people show up, and they all register in our software, and we track what they do while they're there, and we give that information back to Salesforce so they can better market to those customers and prospects. So that's the first cloud. It's a meetings, events, and travel cloud. Second cloud we have is for hotels to actually try to get all of those meetings and events to their venues. So by way of running the meetings and events in our software, we put the planners in a position to find venues and then pass RFPs to those hotels and say, hey, we've got an event. Can we come do it with you? So we actually broker that connection. We book the rooms, and hotels love us for bringing them demand that they wouldn't get. And the corporations love us for running their events getting them to hotels less expensively. So that we have those two clouds, that's what we do.
As we were talking about before the show started, this software probably couldn't have existed 10 years ago. So how old is Lanyon, and was this an idea that somebody had to begin putting this together, or did it evolve from something else?
It did evolve. In fact, Lanyon is a kind of an unknown collection of many software companies that over the last 15 years we have acquired, stitched together, and then tried to skate to where the puck's going to be, which is where we find ourselves today. So these little guys were all trying to put on meetings and put on events and put on travel, and they just didn't have the scale or the muscle to actually put real enterprise software up broadly. And so we've been buying all these companies, and now we've arrived, and the moment has arrived, and event registration is on.
It all came together.
It all came together.
It's amazing what you can do. We were talking about just being able to scan someone's cell phone before they walk into the meeting. With that information, what can you do with it? We were talking about that, but tell us what you can do once my phone is scanned. I'm walking into a meeting. I want to hear that speaker. What happens next with the information you get?
Yes, there's basic stuff we'll do, like push your agenda to you and make sure that you can get into the sessions for which you're registered. Make sure you cannot get into the sessions for which you are not registered. So some basic stuff, security, data, all that stuff. We can also put the conference host in a very dynamic position based on actually where you are physically in the conference or what track you're attending, to push to you real-time, very relevant information while you're there. We can also put the conference host in a position to follow up with you months or days or even a year later with very relevant information based on what you did. So by the fact that you've got this device that is all things now, it becomes a content opportunity for the conference host, but not an annoying one. So if you signed up for 10 events at Dreamforce and you went to just 7, we would not push content to you for the 3 that you did not attend, making Salesforce as the host look a lot more thoughtful, a lot more credible.
And you're real time with all your information too. So it's as I need it that
it
you're
is,
pushing
yes.
information to me.
Yeah, yeah. So there's heat mapping that we can do while you're at a conference. You know, there's clustering. We can tell where you are and what you're interested in. There's a lot of, even with a partner like Salesforce, to stick with them, they push us to be very much on the edge with what we can do with the technology. Yeah.
Part of the reason that your company is so successful is the culture that's been developed. So, again, we talked before the show started. What do you look for with people, and what do you do to help them become more successful?
Yeah, so you know, just before that, what we look for in our company in terms of our scorecards, we've got our smart card, which is, do we have the right strategy, financials, technology, process, brand, all that stuff. That's obviously important. What we pay more attention to is what I describe as our health card. Do we have the right alignment in the company? Have we killed silos? Is productivity up? Is morale up? Is attrition down? So our thesis, and it's not even a thesis, our experience proves to us that healthy teams almost always outperform smart teams or resourced teams. So you and I talked about the San Antonio Spurs, Southwest Airlines, Tesla, just incredibly healthy companies. And they will all tell you that we're probably healthier than we are smart. So within that, attitude drives health. We measure attitude. We actually pay for attitude and we promote for attitude. And that is rooted in the right DNA. So we like talent that is showing great hunger. Are they gritty? Do they have resolve? Are they intellectually curious? Do they stretch themselves? Are they comfortable with uncomfortable situations? We will always have a bias for that over someone that is incredibly smart or talented. And then to kind of put it more simply, we've got a no brilliant jerks policy. You can be a star, but if you got a poor attitude, you're out. And conversely, if you got a great attitude, but your performance is off a bit, we'll work hard to skill you up and keep you on the team.
Much easier to help them change that than to change the negative attitude to a positive.
That's right. Right.
Much easier.
That's right.
Creativity and mistakes. We were talking about that too. Both are necessary. How do you let them make mistakes?
Yeah. So there's let, and then there's really encourage. We did chat about this. So in software in particular, mistakes are wonderful. They are good for innovation. Now, not a long pattern of mistakes, but we encourage them to make mistakes, to be creative. The challenge with that is that from kindergarten through college, they are rewarded to not make mistakes. And it's, in fact, a mistake-free sort of scorecard. And then we get them, and on day one, which I did yesterday with our new hires, we encourage them to make mistakes, and they look at me as though I'm bluffing. We assure them that I'm serious. So we actually have to undo some of that wiring. So we have incentives in place and recognition in place to do that.
Yeah. I remember getting my papers back in school, and if there was 100 questions on there, it would say -4, not +96.
Right. There's a good example.
Focus on what I was doing wrong. comment that I don't believe you, this is something from you, is software is eating the world. Mm. What does that mean?
Well, mostly in a good way. There are unintended consequences of software, from omnipresent on phones for kids to Facebook having, unintended consequences. But generally, it is a good thing. And our lives have significantly improved, whether you're in East Africa or the east side of Manhattan. Your lives have generally improved. What I mean by software is eating the world, if you look at some industries that are very asset intensive, like hard to get into because it's so expensive. Transportation is one. The hotel industry is another. Retail is another. All three of those industries are now led by software companies. So the most valuable transportation company in the world doesn't own a car. It's Uber. The most valuable hotel company in the world does not own a bar of soap. It's Airbnb. And the world's now biggest retailer and most valuable retailer, a $350 billion market cap, doesn't own a store. That's Amazon. So those are three of the most asset-intensive industries where traditional competitors haven't entered for years. Think Walmart, Costco, Starwood, Marriott. No one's entered for years. And now software companies come in, own none of those assets, and they are changing those industries. And it's going to happen to agriculture. The most valuable agricultural company 5 years will be a data company. It'll be a company that helps with weather patterns, soil conditions, temperature, all that sort of stuff. So it's headed that way, which is generally a good thing. What concerns me, though, is that our employee base, our education base is not there. And the real concern is that in 10 years from today, even in Dallas, if unemployment holds, let's say 5%, which would be incredible, there will still be 1 million unfilled software jobs in the United States. A cool thing about software, and I'll stop the plug here, it's the only industry in the world where you can marry up almost any personal passion with a professional job. So if you love architecture, go work at Autodesk. If you love music, you could work at Spotify or Apple, so on and so forth. So you can marry up almost any personal passion and find a career in software. So it's coming.
And the future's in the data.
There's no doubt about it. The future is in the data.
With all this, where's Lanyon going from here? You have all these things in place. What's the future for Lanyon and what you can do in the event planning industry?
Yeah, so actually we'll be very data-centric. So kind of next generation for us is to continue to automate meetings and events and travel to make those experiences as good as it can be. And then bring that demand to hotels as seamlessly and intelligently as it can be. Ultimately, we will provide data back to both of those sets where meeting planners and event planners, corporations are a lot smarter about when, why, how to have meetings. And hotels are a lot smarter about how to bid on those meetings, serve those meetings. Is it cost effective? Is it not? If you're a hotel, should I bid on a meeting in New York City in June against my competitor? Well, if I lose 80% of the time that time of the year, I probably should not. They don't know that now. So that's our biggest opportunity, is to bring both of them great data.
So you're similar to the unnamed sponsor on the TV commercial said, we don't make the product, we just make the product better. You don't do the event, you're making the event better.
We aim to, yeah. I think Salesforce would tell you, because they tell us, they have the biggest high-tech conference on the planet with 170,000 registered attendees. They, at Lanyon Live last year, which we're going to have in a month here in Dallas, October 25th, they got on stage and said, we could not do Dreamforce without Lanyon's software powering the conference.
That's
actually could not do it.
Yeah.
And fortunately for them, it's a big conference, and fortunately for us, we get to host it.
Well, tell everybody how they can find out more about this exciting company called Lanyon.
Well, you can come apply to work for us, which we would love. So we're growing like a weed. We've added 500 jobs in Dallas in the last couple of years. Our website is lanyon.com. We do have our customer conference October 25th here in Dallas. It's 2 days. So for anybody looking to learn more about how to put their meetings, events, and travel into a software package, we'll save them a lot of money. We'd encourage you to come visit us.
Lanyon.com. David, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. You are a playmaker.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
David Bonnett is the CEO of Lanyon. Don't go away. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with the CEO of Southwest Transplant Alliance. Her name is Patty Niles. Back with Patty right after this.
Operation Kindness is the original and largest no-kill animal shelter in North Texas, having saved more than 80,000 cats and dogs over almost 40 years. On a day-to-day basis, Operation Kindness cares for approximately 300 cats and dogs, with another 150 in foster homes. In the past 12 months, more than 4,200 homeless cats and dogs have received medical care, clean shelter, nutritious food, and playtime until they were adopted into a new forever home. Go to OperationKindness.org to adopt or foster a dog or cat. Donate or volunteer. That's OperationKindness.org.
The 31st annual Run for the Children is now the WOKC Spooktacular Sprint for the Children. Run or walk on Saturday, October 22nd at Lone Star Park in Grand Prairie. All proceeds benefit Wipeout Kids Cancer to raise awareness and funding for childhood cancer research and to provide hope and support for children with cancer. Choose from a one-mile fun run or a 5K course. Cash prizes will be awarded to the top winners in each age category. Join everyone for the on-site post-race party. That's Saturday, October 22nd at Lone Star Park. Go to WOKC.org to register for fun and to Wipeout Kids Cancer.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. We're here with another playmaker. Patty Niles joined Southwest Transplant Alliance in January of 2013 and is credited with turning the organization to one of the most successful organ recovery organizations in the country. Southwest Transplant Alliance is a nonprofit organ procurement organization. For more than 40 years, STA has been saving lives by recovering donated organs for transplantation. During her tenure at STA, the organization has seen a dramatic increase in the number of organs recovered for transplantation. In 2015, STA was able to recover 1,123 organs for transplantation, a record for STA, and an accomplishment achieved by only a handful of organ procurement organizations. Well, with all that, Patty, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be here.
We've been talking about organs, so what is the need? What's the importance of organ, eye, and tissue donation?
So in the country today, there are over 120,000 people waiting for a life-saving organ transplant. There's also several others who are waiting for tissue transplants, such as skin. If you have burns, you need skin for that. If you need accordion transplant, of course, those are important. And there's nothing like the real thing. I mean, there's no synthetics for corneas or no synthetics. The 3D printing hasn't come along yet for organ transplants. There are about 13,000 people in the state waiting for a transplant. So the need is there, and the supply is very low. We have only about less than 1% of the people who die every day can be an organ donor. So it's a very small group of potential organ donors that we even have.
And how do you identify that 1%? How do you find out if they actually can donate their organ to someone else?
We have several different stages of donation that happens. And the first one, of course, is the public promotion of donation like we're doing today. And so getting people signed up on the registry is important. We have about 40% of the adult population who sign up to be an organ donor in the state of Texas today. That's pretty low compared to some other states, but we're also one of the newer registries. So we see that increasing every month and every year.
Well, before I forget, let's talk about that before we go anywhere else. Where does someone register so their organs can be reused?
If you go to DonateLifeTexas.org, you can sign up to be an organ donor. That is your best way to do it. Or check your driver's license. You should have a little heart on the right, on the bottom right side that designates that you are indeed an organ donor.
And I believe I did that when I re-registered for my driver's license. I didn't go to the website, so you can do it either way.
You can do it either way, yes.
What's the percentage we should have here in Texas?
We should have about 70%. I think that's probably the expected. We have our goal in the country is to get about 75% of the potential organ donors, and that would capture that.
And you really have a big effort then in almost doubling.
We do.
Potential organ donors, because if you do that, that 1% rises. There's more you can choose from.
So we have lots of campaigns going on that target certain populations to try to drive that and increase that.
When people donate organs, it just doesn't help one person. How many lives can be benefited from an organ donor?
So one hero, because I call them heroes, can potentially affect up to 50 people through tissue and eye donation and save 8 lives through organ donation.
That's amazing that one person is able to do that when they're offering their organs after they've expired. You came into a situation where you were losing money. about 4 years ago. Now, you're a nonprofit.
Correct.
And you need to have as much money coming in. How did you turn it around? How did you get back to where you are now to, I guess, become profitable?
Well, as a nurse, I have to use the analogy. You know, you find where the bleeding is, and you put your finger in it, and you stop it. And that's really what I did. It was kind of a bad business model, meaning the more we did, the more in debt we went. So I really had to get to the root of the problem, found what it was, renegotiated some contracts so that we were paying less. We're a little different financially run organization than your typical healthcare, for sure different than any not-for-profit you would expect. Even though we're not-for-profit, we do get Medicare dollars, so we're funded. We are subsidized by Medicare, so at the end of the year, if we're losing money, Medicare will send us money. At the end of the year, if we're making money, we send Medicare money. So Medicare is very happy with us right now. We're sending them money. And the way that we get our funding, that's a frequent question. When we have, let's say, a kidney that goes to a transplant center, we charge that transplanter that fee, and that recoups our cost. And because we do have to pay for the ICU time, the OR time in hospitals, of course, our staff time, and the airplanes that we have to fly around Texas. We have a very large geography, so the costs are a little bit higher than maybe some smaller program. But this year, we've just decreased our acquisition fee, meaning how much we're charging the transplant centers for kidney. So I think that's a pretty remarkable feat in itself.
Which I didn't understand when I was doing some research about your organization. You don't charge the patients. You are billed by the hospital. That's where the money comes from you. Is that correct?
So there's the cost associated with donation, meaning the operating time. When we're in the hospitals, we're running lab tests and x-rays and such. So we get billed for those costs. And then on the transplant side, wherever that organ goes, we charge the transplant center. So we don't really charge that patient who gets the transplant. It comes from the transplant center.
We're speaking with Patty Niles. Patty is the president and CEO of Southwest Transplant Alliance. The website is very easy to remember, organ.org. So what's your mission? What is your mission for STA?
We have a very simple mission. We save lives. And we say it very simply because that's exactly what we do. We're in this for many reasons, but the big reason we're here is to save lives through organ transplantation. But we also work for our donor families. We spend a lot of time with our families. It's not a matter of going in there and getting a yes and moving on. We are making a difference for our donor families. You know, when a death happens and you leave that hospital, there's nothing positive to hold on to. But if donation happens, you have a connection for many years. You know, we've had some families that have met some of the recipients, and it's an incredible experience. And I've personally been able to put together a few families and some recipients, and it is an experience that it goes without.
It must be a bonding experience.
It is. We have a particular case I can talk about was a mother who had lost a couple daughters, and one of her daughters was an organ donor, and she in turn met the liver recipient, and those two have bonded, and it's not her daughter, but he's bonded to her like she is her daughter.
In effect, to a parent, that child has lived on.
Absolutely. So you'll see people who've donated maybe the heart of their child, who puts their ear on the chest of the person who got the heart transplant. And it is so touching. It's beyond words.
This is not your first venture into the organ world. You've been doing this for a while. What's your background? How did you get into helping save lives?
I was an intensive care nurse for several years and was able to take care of the people who got kidney transplants. And that's kind of what sparked my interest. But I also had the experience of having organ donors on my unit. And I saw the people who got the transplants, and I saw what it meant to the families when they were able to end this horrible tragedy and turn it into something positive. And it kind of sparked my interest. And so I started that venture 25 years ago and took on a staff position in the organ donor program in Ohio. And then I moved and took on a director's position. And then the last job I had was in New Mexico. I was the executive director for 9 years. So it's been a journey, one that you look back and you go, how did I get here? And it's just a matter of taking risk and knowing when to open a door and when to shut one.
Well, you came into this organization 4 years ago.
I did.
And you had to turn things around. Were there any, or have there been any ahas that you've had, any or any playmaking moves that you've done to turn around STA?
There were plenty of aha moments the first 90 days, and there's always some expected things that you find that you go, wow, I had no idea that existed. So there were a lot of things that we had to fix, and we did that. My biggest challenge was fixing the finances, which I did, and then fixing the turnover. When you have a staff that work 24/7, 365 days a year, it is really hard. And they're working with tragedies every day. So the burnout rate is really high. So trying to capture that knowledge and build on it and keep it is a challenge. And it's one that I face every day because you spend about 12 months educating these nurses and staff members. So you want to hold on to that and not reach that burnout. And so trying to be preemptive and hire accordingly to what you foresee the activity is going to be. That was a kind of a strategic move in the beginning when I knew that we didn't have the finances, but knowing I had to double the staff quickly, that was a big aha. And our board was faithful, and they bought into my vision, and it all worked out.
You have all the balls up in the air that you're keeping up, making sure that people know about organ donations, getting them to people, and also taking care of your staff too.
Absolutely.
It's a busy job. How about living donors? We've been talking about donors that have died. How about living donors?
We really don't deal with that. That would be a transplant center initiative. Like if you are waiting for a kidney and you happen to have a really good friend or a family member who says, I want to donate my kidney to you, then you would just take that particular person with you to the transplant center, and that kind of gets worked out there.
So you're working with the donors that have died already.
Correct.
Rather than living donors. Well, you're in Texas, how many hospitals do you work with?
We have over 200 hospitals in our transplant centers, or in our transplant geographic zone. We go from El Paso to Texarkana, but we don't have like Fort Worth. So it's a very eclectic geography mix. It is what it is, and we have to deal with it. Medicare decided years ago where you are is where it stops, and that's where we are.
Well, I've read that you have facilitated more than 22,000 organs for recovery and enhance the lives of tens of thousands of people. But you were telling me before the show started, even with all that, people are dying. How often does that happen?
We have about 20 people in the country that die every day waiting for a transplant who don't have that opportunity. And that's why we push this mission so hard. You know, we work with the worst of the worst and the best of the best all in one day. And we know the fallacies that are out there, you know, the fear that if I'm in a car accident and I'm taken to the emergency room, they're not going to take care of me. They're only going to be interested in my organs. And I can tell you firsthand, as being one of those nurses in the ER, you care about the person in front of you. You do everything you can to save their life. That is your job. And I don't know who in the world would think about someone they don't know on a list somewhere more than that person in front of you. So that is a fallacy. Everything's done to save that person's life. And when that end is near, then the hospitals call us and we come in and talk to those families about their options.
So tell everybody how they can get a hold of Southwest Transplant Alliance.
I would say the best way is to start with our website at organ.org.
And they can also get the phone number on our website, which is playmakerstalkshow.com. Well, Patty, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. You are a playmaker.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here, Steve.
Patty Niles, President and CEO of Southwest Transplant Alliance. And our first guest was David Bonnet. David is CEO of Lanyon. This has been a terrific show. Thank you to our guests for being playmakers. It's been great having them on the show. And thank you all so much for joining us on air. Join us also at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com. And we're going to be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join him again next Friday at 3 p.m. for another sit-down with DFW's most interesting playmakers.